The Daily Connect Podcast.
A very warm welcome to the Daily Connect Podcast for Wednesday, the 10th of October, 2018. No, your ears do not deceive you. It's not the dulcet tones of Stephen Scott today, but rather Chris Wallace with you on the podcast. Stephen is off sick, so let's join me in wishing him all the very best today. Don't worry though, we still have a fantastic podcast available for you. On today's show, we're going to be finding out about a brand new RNIB Connect community group. It's an LGBT plus group and it's run by Mike Holroyd, who we'll meet a little later in the show. We'll also be continuing our fantastic Pause for Thought series, and not only shall we be meeting Sam Little, but also her beautiful guide dog, Ziggy, and hearing all about their story. But first of all, as RNIB celebrates its 150th anniversary this month, which is a momentous achievement for our charity that continues to campaign for a better future for blind and partially sighted people, let's chat to Michelle Acton from Fight for Sight, who joined Red Sail to salute the work that RNIB has done.
Michelle Acton is the CEO of Fight for Sight, the charity that raises money for research into causes of sight loss. She came into the studio to talk about how life for people with sight loss has changed over the last few years. Michelle, welcome to Connect Radio.
Thank you very much. It's very good to be here.
So can you tell us a little bit more about Fight for Sight?
Well, Fight for Sight is a charity that's existed since 1965, and we have funded over that time research into looking at what causes different forms of sight loss, and also trying to develop new treatments that can help prevent people losing their sight and also stop people losing their sight once they've been diagnosed with a particular eye disease or condition.
So RNIB has been around for 150 years and things have changed enormously during those 150 years. Our concentration is far more on giving help, advice and equipment to people with sight loss. What have been the main changes medically that have come about for people with sight loss since 1868 to the current day?
Well, if you take a global perspective, we're sitting here today, it's estimated that there are 253 million people around the world living with some form of visual impairment. Of those, 36 million are blind and 217 million people have moderate to severe vision impairment. And it's fair to say that today, 80% of vision impairment could be prevented or cured. But of course, what we've seen over the last decades or the last century is some real developments in being able to address certain eye diseases and conditions. If you go back to the olden days, when people had a cataract, they used to take a stick and bash their eye so that the lens that had gone cloudy could be moved out of the path of light going into the eye. I think it's fair to say that over the decades, over the centuries, now moving to a 20-minute procedure, cataract surgery has come on in leaps and bounds since the first sort of recognition of what needed to be done to dislodge a cloudy lens. So I think we've seen massive advances in cataract surgery. But I think globally what we've also seen is a significant decline in infectious eye diseases around the world. As we've seen over that period, the development of antibiotics and other drugs, the prevalence of infectious eye diseases like trachoma and river blindness have reduced significantly, and particularly over the last 25 years or so, as we've seen increasing investment in government programs and charitable programs worldwide. I think if you look at some of the other areas, what we're now starting to see are real changes to address conditions like macular degeneration, where in the last decade we've started to see some drugs, at least, that can help through injections to address wet macular degeneration. And given what we now know about genetics, which we certainly didn't know before the turn of this century, what we are starting to do is really understand the genetics of different eye diseases and conditions as well. And so going forward, What we hope is that we will be able to take this increasing knowledge and use that to develop new ways of preventing and treating eye diseases and conditions.
Now, all this costs money, and I know that you are very much at the forefront of making the case for investment in this kind of research and technology.
That's right. Medical research is very expensive and it does take a long time. And often, of course, what really needs to happen is some quite early stage research. And it's fair to say that a lot of people who are involved in developing drugs and treatments don't necessarily want to invest in early stage research because that's quite risky. And so what Fight for Sight has developed a specialisation in is actually funding really quite early stage research that can then prove that certain things are or are not true, so that actually we can then use that research to leverage further funds from others because we have taken some of the risk out of funding that early stage research.
And you're very much an advocate for the pooling of resources between organisations that look into different genetic diseases that have different symptoms, whether it's blindness or diabetes or multiple sclerosis.
That's right. Whilst we have a focus on certain eye diseases and conditions, there is a growing recognition, particularly with an ageing population, that people nowadays are living with multiple conditions. And so what we're very keen to do is to invest in research and work in partnership with other organisations around conditions such as diabetes and sight loss, stroke and sight loss, Alzheimer's and sight loss. It's just this recognition that actually as we age, the question is going to be the quality of life and how many and which conditions people may find themselves living with.
So if I were to put you in my TARDIS and take you forward a few years, well, how far forward would we have to travel before Fight for Sight could actually shut up shop?
Well, that is our mission. We do want to shut up shop, and we will shut up shop at the point that every eye disease and condition can be prevented and treated. If I were sitting here 10 years ago, I think I would have had an entirely different answer to that question than sitting here today. It was only 10 years ago that actually we saw the first clinical trials of a potential treatment for inherited retinal conditions. And what we're starting to see now is many more trials of treatments. And in the States, we've seen the FDA approve the first ever gene therapy for a particular inherited retinal disease. And I think a lot of the things that are happening now, 10 years ago, we would just not have thought that they were possible. So sitting here today, we know that medical research takes a long time. We know that we've got to invest. And we've been going since 1965. So we've been going for 53 years. We've seen huge progress in that time. And we would very much like to believe that actually it's not going to take another 53 years for us to be able to deliver on our mission.
So, as CEO of Fight for Sight, if you could give RNIB a 150th anniversary gift, what would that be?
I think my 150th anniversary gift to the RNIB would be an enormous congratulations for the support and services that they have provided over 150 years, and to also recognise all of the work that the RNIB has done in raising the profile of blindness and sight loss. And without that, it would be incredibly difficult for us at Fight for Sight to be able to raise the funds and to be able to invest in the research that we feel is necessary.
Michelle Acton, thank you so much for being a guest on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
There is a brand new RNIB Connect community group. It's an LGBT plus group, and RNIB Connect Radio's Barry Snell has been finding out all about it as he chatted to Mike Holroyd. We're going to chat about a new RNIB Connect group now, and this one will be of particular interest to the LGBT plus community. And here to tell me more about it is Mike Holroyd, who is RNIB's volunteer facilitator for the West of Scotland.
That's correct. Yes, indeed. We have our first event coming up in just under a week's time, actually, in the centre of Glasgow, which is, as you say, of particular interest to people who identify as LGBT, but not exclusively so. We want everybody to feel welcome at this event.
Now, Mike, there are already RNIB Connect groups out there. Can you just explain what goes on within a Connect group, please?
Well, we're very fortunate in the west of Scotland and indeed in the east of Scotland, where we have many, many Connect groups doing all sorts of different things, from reading books to walking, tandeming, really all sorts of groups. So every group will be as unique as the number of groups there are. And we have over 40 in Scotland. We as RNIB, our role is to support anybody who wants to set up or be part of an interest group or a meet and greet group or anything. But the whole idea is that rather than, you know, us as RNIB doing things for people, it's very much about empowering and supporting people to develop their ideas and to bring people together.
And you mentioned this one will be of particular interest to the LGBT community.
Well, there are obviously people who are visually impaired with many different backgrounds. And just because you have a visual impairment doesn't mean to say that you don't have other interests as well. And we thought, or at least some Connect members came to us and felt that there needs to be some support for LGBT people, but also their families, supporters, friends, and anybody who's interested. So this isn't just an LGBT event. This is for absolutely everybody. But there is a particular need. This started really in thinking about Glasgow Pride and how we had three volunteers who gave us an excellent presence there. So it's not just about supporting people who identify as visually impaired and lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, etc. But it's also about reaching out into the gay community. It can be very isolating living with a disability in the gay community. And so this event is as much to reach out to them as it is to cater for blind and partially sighted people.
Now, as a gay man yourself, Mike, to have this Connect group with the RNIB support, that must be a good feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really important. To me, it just shows that we think of ourselves as whole people. You know, sometimes, you know, once you identify as visually impaired, everything else kind of takes second place. But, you know, as a gay man, it's really important to be able to connect with people. And, you know, I often say, there's less understanding in the gay community about visual impairment than there is in the visually impaired community about being gay, and we need to redress that balance.
Definitely. So what are some of the ideas you've had then, Mike, about how you can take this new Connect group forward?
Yeah, so the idea is that the Connect members who have been driving this forward are particularly interested in films and books, so that will probably play quite a big part in the group, but we don't want it to be just about that. There might be an opportunity for people to do running or just sit and chat and have a cup of tea and coffee, whatever. So really, this is the emphasis of the first event on the 11th of October is to ask people what sorts of things they would want from such a group.
So then, Mike, just to clarify, whereabouts is this event taking place and how can people find out more information?
Sure. So it's the GCU, the Glasgow Caledonian University, and that's just the far side of Buchanan Street bus station. So not the side that goes towards Buchanan Street itself, but the other side. And we're in the C building, C-E-E, that's spelt, and it's floor one. And that's 5:30 till 8 o'clock on the 11th of October. If you want more information, then you can give me a call on 07712 539 409 or email mike.holroyd, and Holroyd is spelled H-O-L-R-O-Y-D at rnib.org.uk. just want to emphasize again, Barry, that, you know, it's not just for LGBT people, for anybody, family people, straight people, you know, people who don't identify as anything. It's for everybody. And we need that. We need, you know, to show solidarity with each other. And if we really believe in a more inclusive world, then that's something we can all play a part in.
Everyone can be connected.
Aye.
Well, Mike, we wish you all the luck in the world with the new project. Mike Holroyd, RNIB's volunteer facilitator for the West of Scotland, thank you for talking to us on RNIB Connect Radio.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
Time now for our continuing Pause for Thought series, and in today's episode, Sam Little, former host of A Little Alternative here on RNIB Connect Radio, is telling us all about her relationship with her guide dog, Ziggy. Here's Stephen Scott chatting to Sam Little.
Hi.
Good to have you here, Sam. I know you are a beloved owner of a guide dog, Ziggy. Tell us how the relationship came about, how you ended up with a guide dog.
So it was in 2016, and I was working down in Glasgow, and I was really getting stressed out with, like, getting the train and travelling up and down the country. And having a guide dog is something that had played on my mind for quite a long time. But because I still have really good central vision, I always thought maybe it wasn't something for me. But I decided to bite the bullet and had the assessment, and I got put on the waiting list. And I actually ended up being on the waiting list for a year, and I was actually thinking about coming off it when I got the phone call. And my husband encouraged me to go along and do the visit and do the match. And I still wasn't sure, and he had a sleepover. I feel really bad because he's lying right next to me at the moment.
Cover his ears.
And it was a case of the next morning. I remember I woke up and I was like, do you know what? A guide dog's not for me. And I went downstairs and he was just sitting there, and we just had this connection. And I was just like, I'd be silly not to give it a go. And he changed my life in so many different ways. I think at first I really struggled because I'd been a cane user for so long. You can't fold up a dog and put it in your bag once you get on the train.
Not legally. Like,
no, not Diggy anyway. He's huge. So I really struggled with the kind of this new sense of responsibility, this very visual public display of my sight loss, whereas with a cane, nobody notices you have a cane. You know, you can just walk about, do your thing, put it away, and nobody would even notice. Whereas as soon as you have a guide dog, it's a bit like being a celebrity. You know, everybody stares at you, everybody wants to talk to you, you're constantly in like public engagement mode. And I really struggled with that. Whilst he is an amazing dog, like, he's so chilled out, he's really good for my stress levels and my mental health, he's quite good at keeping me grounded, and you know, I never have to worry that he's gonna be bark or like jump off on anyone like that. He's really, really well behaved and he gives out really chilled vibes. It was just, as I was out and about, it's just like, oh yeah, I've got this dog and I need to, you know, and because I've got some good dental vision, I could see like all the people staring at me, and those were the ones I could see. I could see all these people giving me looks. I could see the people's like expressions when they come up to me and be like, "Oh, you're training him?" And I'm like, "No, he's my guide dog." And they're like, "Oh, you don't look blind." And I'm like, "Oh, great, thanks for that observation." So
nice for people kind of like, to comment on that kind of thing, isn't it? And actually, that was a subject of a video that you made, because you work at the BBC and you are part of the social. And one of the videos that you made was around this very topic. You know, you don't look blind, and you talked about your experience of that. How much of that do you think? And I ask this from a personal place as well, because I do a bit of this. How much of that do you think is other people's view? Or how much of it do you think is you thinking that's what people think of you?
I think that's a fair question. I think for me, it was something I had never really been told before. I had people say to me, oh, you would never know, you cope with it really well. And I didn't mind that. I was like, okay, that's fair enough. That shows I adapt really well and I cope really well. But it was this new phrase that people felt the need to tell me. And I couldn't understand why people would think that, because surely if someone's using a guide dog, that must mean they have some form of visual impairment. So I can understand why it's easy to think, like, you get this idea in your head that people, you know, have this assumption about you. But I actually had people saying it to me, and that really frustrated me. And I guess that's one thing I found through this relationship, is from an external point of view, there's still so much awareness needed to be raised. So I used my position as a content maker and my platform to think, well, you know what, I'm just going to make videos about my experience. And I think they've done pretty well. Nobody's refused me a taxi or said I don't look blind since those videos came out. So I don't know if I'm some sort of blacklist somewhere. But yeah, so I've been quite lucky that I'm in a position that I can, you know, tell people about my journey and my experience and use my position to sort of try and educate and raise awareness in people.
It's more than a dog, isn't it? I mean, you know, like you say, it's in a lot of ways the dog helps you become more independent, which is great. And that's the story that we hear time and time again. But in your case, what's interesting, and I have heard this from other people, but not a huge amount of people, maybe because someone don't want to say it, is that it does highlight public attitudes towards us as blind people, and that there is still a long way to go before people fully understand what it's like to be blind or partially sighted. My question to you, though, is how much should we expect of the public in this?
That is something I've battled with over the last year. At first, I was really angry, and I was just like, why don't these people know this? Like, it's just common knowledge. But I've learned over the year that if people don't know, they don't know. Like, some people can go their whole life and never come across a guide dog. Some people are just so dog obsessed that when they see a dog, they just don't see me. They just don't see a harness. And I'm not saying that's okay, but these are just the type of people you're going to come across. And I think it's really important that no matter how rubbish you feel or how many times you've had to say to someone, that you just treat each person with like a clean slate and just be like, explain, no, you can't touch him or talk to him. This is why. Oh, I didn't know. And even though there's a voice inside you that's like, yeah, you probably did. But it's just be like, that's okay, now you do. So I've just kind of developed this little speech or spiel, for want of a word, that every time I come across a situation, I do this. And then some people just won't be told, you know. But I think we can only expect as much as people are aware of. And that's why, like, it's so important that schools, when they're learning about senses or disabilities, or at high school, or, you know, all these different educational groups, you know, that's why it's so important that we get them young, you know. Like, yeah, we really try and raise awareness and educate people. And then I guess the more people who have access to a guide dog and are independent and are able to go out and about, the more that people get used to seeing someone with a guide dog. So that's why, you know, sometimes I'm like, oh, it's so much easier just to like get a taxi or whatever, because I can't be bothered dealing with people. I sometimes just think, you know what, I'm just going to go for it, just so people get used to seeing me out and about. Because I think the more integrated and the more, not normal, I don't like using the word normal, but kind of
maybe normalizing, perhaps. Normalizing. Yeah. Uh-huh. Because that's the thing, isn't it? We're not seen much in public. And it almost, it's a strange thing that in 2018, in a world now where, you know, the world around us has changed so much, people identify in so many different ways, and the public are expected to accept that. They're instantly expected mm-hmm. to accept someone who is non-binary, for example, and, you know, that, yeah, and that is, you know, it should be accepted. Whereas blind people still seem to be, I don't know what the right word is, but we still seem to be either unknown or an unknown quantity that exists in society with a very small voice, and we're not, there's very little expectation of us as well, which creates other problems. We could talk for hours on this, I'm sure, but I just want to ask you one more thing. We need to get you back on the show at some point. We must talk more on this, but I want to ask you, taking everything into consideration, you know, thinking about the public's impression of you, your, as you say, your kind of announcement to the world that you've got a visual impairment through having the guide dog and all the experience that you've had with Ziggy, good and bad, is it something you would recommend to others?
Yes. For me, it's only really been in the last couple of months that it's just all fallen into place. It's clicked and I don't get stressed out by stuff as much anymore. I'm much better at managing situations and that bond is just there. So I think it's still a journey. Me and Vicky are still discovering how we work together and how we fit with each other. But I would definitely recommend it. Like, you don't know it if you don't try it. And on a personal level, like that relationship you have with a dog, like when you're having a really bad blind day, like they're just there. And, you know, for me, I always struggle with like constantly phoning people or texting people, like, oh, you know, I'm going through this. The dog's just there. I can just give you a cuddle or you just like comfort you. And I think that's just as important as the independence bit, because a lot of people don't, they don't ever think, well, if someone's got a disability, that must have a massive impact on their mental health. So for me, having a guide dog has just been as crucial to dealing with the psychological and mental impact of having a disability as well as the mobility aspect of it. I think, like all mental health, it's something that's not spoken about enough. So if you're thinking about it, go and speak to someone, speak to as many people as you can about it. But I would highly recommend it. It's a difficult journey, but it's been so amazing in so many ways and I wouldn't change it for anything.
I would love to get you back on to talk more on the mental health angle, because I think that's a huge part of this people just don't talk about. And the fact you've acknowledged it today, I think is going to make some people feel that they are not alone in that. And I think that's a really important thing you've brought up. So I appreciate you doing that. Sam, thank you so much for coming on to the Daily Connect today. Hope you and Ziggy have a great day.
Thank you, Stephen. Speak soon.
The Daily Connect podcast.
And that's it for the Daily Connect podcast. There will be a brand new podcast with you just after 5 p.m. tomorrow. But don't forget, we want your voice to join the show. This is the voice of the Connect community here on RNIB Connect Radio. So why not join the conversation? You can email us radio@rnib.org.uk or join us on social media. We're at RNIB Radio on Twitter. We're also on Facebook and you can find us just by searching for RNIB Connect Radio. In the meantime, I wish you a fond farewell and enjoy whatever it is that you're up to tonight. Join me again on the Daily Connect podcast tomorrow.
The Daily Connect podcast.